in the history-making inauguration of our first African-American in the true sense of the word, because his father was African, his mother was an American, and he is, in truth, a true half-African and half-American president. So history-making will be in the cards tomorrow. This is Raylan Allen. I'm the publisher of Rumor Mill News. And Richard Green, you're now the senior editor of Rumor Mill News. Executive editor, okay.
Thank you.
We were talking about the Globe, and I was just telling the story about how Barack Obama offered John Edwards the vice presidency if he would enter the race and split the vote with Hillary. And so the moderate Democrats did split the vote between Hillary and John Edwards, and the far left Democrats went with Barack Obama. And shortly before Hillary and Obama could, before we knew who was going to be the nominee, the Globe outed John Edwards' love child. And I swear to God, either Obama's people double-crossed Edwards, or Hillary's people double-crossed Edwards. What do you think happened?
My vote is that Hillary's people put the knife in John Edwards in a desperation ploy. They thought that perhaps this would lead to a ripple effect, and that by sympathy, the non-Obama Democrats would gravitate to the Hillary camp as a reaction against the good old boy being stabbed in the back, even though they did it. It wasn't clear at the time.
Well, you know, there's so many of these games that are played. You were talking about the Globe not being available in your area. Well, when the Globe published the story on Obama, where he was born, it was not in my area either. I had a friend that mails it to me, if you can believe it. And of course, I immediately copied the picture and then linked it to the story on the Globe page. But interestingly enough, that issue that has where Obama was really born also has this article that Brian was talking about, the Camilla suicide bid drama, that she plunges 40 feet and lives. Now, I don't understand why they would be bringing up the royal family right now. Do you have any idea what's going on there?
Not exactly, but I can tell you this. It's hard to kill a horse, and Camilla is a horse.
I can agree with that, but my God, she drinks so much. At least that's what they want us to believe. You never know whether or not that's the truth. But
I think you need to go back to that fabulous movie Cat Ballou with Jane Fonda and think about the drunken horse in that.
Oh, I never saw that movie, so you're going to have to tell me what the drunken horse was.
Well, it's a Western comedy about an aging gunfighter and some other things, but one of the funniest scenes in it is this horse gets drunk on beer. So
that's the way that you see Camilla.
Yeah, she's a non-entity. Why Charles hitched the wagon to her is unclear, except that maybe, you know,
she was blackmailing him?
I don't think so. She's not that important. I think that, in all honesty, and not to be too graphic about it, I think that perhaps his tastes are a little eclectic and somewhat perverted, and she was probably quite sanguine about servicing his needs. And, you know, I mean, he's Prince Charles, but he's a human being and a man and a weirdo. What do you want? Look where he grew up. Look at the people who surrounded him, all a bunch of liars and thieves and backstabbers. And, you know, has he ever had a day in his life since he was like 10, that he could trust anybody around him? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. The same with his sons. And
well,
I know that at the moment, Harry is being crucified.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, with Prince Charles, we're talking about his son, because the other boy is obviously the son of that military guy.
That's correct.
So
maybe they're crucifying Harry to get rid of him right now.
Could be. could be, but who knows? He's too important to eliminate. So you have to cut him down to size and make him an object of ridicule in some fashion or form. That's been the way the British have done their politics for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we shouldn't be surprised that now they've turned on the royal family in that regard. There's so many things going on, and it's difficult to keep up with even half of them, but we do try. And one of the things about Rumor Mill is that there's no holds barred. There's almost any issue that some of our agents are interested in, if not just one. And one of the reasons why people can come and read things that they don't read other places or find references to things that they might not know about is because our agents are always looking for what's not being reported to them locally. Thus, news from other parts of the world that doesn't get on the radar screen here, so to speak, comes out. And we can at least link to other sources of media if we can't do all the reporting ourselves. I mean, we don't have an international staff, and we're all volunteers and such. But it does show that, in our case, the search for truth and the love for the truth, or at least, you know, a different angle on the lies, motivates people to work hard and to do things that we could never afford to pay them for if we had billions of dollars.
Well, isn't that the truth? Because we literally have thousands of people around the world that do our research for us and give us stories and give us information.
Right.
And you know, Richard, I'm reminded of several years ago when you were doing those radio shows with Georgianne Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
And you were doing such incredible investigation into all of these missing women.
Yes.
And there was one that was murdered near you. I can't think what her name is.
Suzanne Jovan.
Yes. Now, why was that case so important to you?
It was important to me because it happened here in the New Haven area. It was important to me because she was a senior at Yale. It was important to me because her father was a famous scientist, one of the world's leading experts on microplating and certain bacterial phenomena, the development of different bacteria over time, and because she was killed brutally for reasons that have never, ever been discovered. And it was important to me because another guy, who was a Yale man, and who was a political science teacher and advisor to the young lady, Miss Joanne, was hung out to dry and all but accused of killing her when he had both no reason or motive, and because he was just simply someone that she knew her. And they tried to make out that this instructor, who had done a tour with the CIA and was a Navy man, had a Jones for the girl and decided to kill her rather than face the fact that she didn't want to have a love affair with him. When in fact, it was found in the subsequent investigation that all of this stuff was put out by the New Haven Police Department, you know, under the tables of the local news media to smear the guy. And then when that all fell apart and he threatened to sue everybody, they recanted, sort of. And in the subsequent years, it's now been 10 years since she died, we don't know anything. We don't know why she was killed. And this was an extremely bright, promising, lovely young woman who was dedicated to making the lives of the retarded and the developmentally challenged adults better. She was multilingual. She spoke German like a native, was fluent in Spanish, and, of course, had been raised, you know, as an English-speaking daughter of a brilliant scientist. To this date, we do not know who stabbed her to death and left her to die bleeding on a street corner in northern New Haven, in one of the finest neighborhoods in all of Connecticut, you know, where there's million-dollar houses. It's a mystery, and being a Scorpio, I love mysteries, and I've gone to the site many times and, you know, put a little prayer up, hoping for some clarity and some information that would come to me to help solve the murder, because there used to be at least a tradition amongst Yale men that they took care of each other. Even if they weren't friends, even if they didn't know each other, they came to each other's aid in a crisis. And nobody came to her aid, that is to say, after she died. it was just left hanging. And then they had another Yale man accused of killing her because he was jealous or because she refused his advances, you know, made no sense whatsoever. At the time, the policy at Yale on instructors and students having romantic relationships had just been implemented, and it was a effing no-go, you know. Not to be too crude about it, but you just, if you wanted to have a career at Yale, there was not going to be anything like that on your record. And this fellow had been closely associated with a guy named Antonio Lasaga, who had been the master of the residential college where the fellow from the Navy worked as dean. So he knew him really well. And this guy was arrested for copious amounts of child pornography and for attempting to corrupt the morals of a minor beginning at the age 12. And he lost his position as a full professor, and he was indicted and convicted, and he's doing hard time now as a pedophile and a would-be child pornographer and a distributor of child pornography. Now, all of this happened in the months running up to the death of Suzanne Jovan, and I just can't believe that it's not somehow related and there's not some kind of tit-for-tat going on behind the scenes there. It didn't occur to me at the time. It took some years for some of this material to come out. But this is the backdrop to the murder of this brilliant and likable young lady. And I'm the old school. You know, something happened to a fellow Yale graduate, or almost graduate in her case, and we don't know what happened. And there's no end to it until someone is arrested, charged, and either convicted or not. It got under my skin, and partly, I guess, because some things you don't feel too deeply until you are a father and a parent, and the fact that I did not know the young lady, never heard about her or anything until after she died, weighed heavily on my conscience for a while because I did not want to be one of those people who rides in after the crime is committed saying, I know.
Mm-hmm.
But things just didn't add up, and the case is still open. Her murder is unsolved. This is not to diminish the fact that other young women have been murdered in New Haven over the past 10 years. Most of them were black. Most of them never got any investigation of any kind. In some cases, it was a jealous boyfriend. In some cases, it was a dispute over distribution of narcotics or something like that, or just madness. And the thing is that this was a young lady who was bent on doing good things in the world. She had a good heart by all accounts. People who know her, who knew her then, I should say, who knew her well, thought that she was just the apple of the eye. And it galled me. It irritated me terrifically. And then when this fellow, who was an instructor and he had graduated from Yale and done a stint in the Navy and gone to Yugoslavia and so forth and was, you know, naval intelligence, when he got nailed by innuendo, not by an outright confrontational, you know, accusation, not by an indictment, not even by, you know, anything except an interview with the New Haven police, when he got nailed on this and people started to gossip that he had probably done it because who else could do it? I mean, after all, he lived on the street that connected to the corner where the young lady was killed, and he did know her pretty well as a student. But why? I mean, I can't think of anything that will kill your career in academics quicker than having an affair with an undergraduate when you are an instructor bent on becoming a full professor at some point in the near future. And trust me, he was on the fast track to become a professor at Yale, a professor of political science with an expertise in the intelligence apparatus of the country and intelligence issues, how they dovetail with political issues, and so forth. A comer, a really strong, you know, candidate to become a professor of political science at some point down the highway. And they done him dirt. You know, they ruined him in the newspapers without a scintilla of evidence. Nothing, except that she died on the street that happened to connect to the street where he lived. It wasn't even the same street. It changed names. But it's been unsolved. That galls me. And as a Scorpio and interested in all kinds of mysteries, I have been following it, you know, with as much energy as I could muster over the years. It's now been 10 years, and there's really nothing left to say, nothing left to ask, it seems like her murder will go down as one of those unsolved events, that it happened to entirely too many young women of quality and talent. And I think of Chandra Levy and the pain that her family went through, and the fact that, you know, her body was missing for a year before it turned up somewhere that they searched two or three times when they were first looking for her there in Rock Creek Park. I mean, come on. And we're expected to believe this nonsense. We're expected to just roll over and take it. I won't take it anymore. That's mine.
Richard, I wanted to ask you, you've done quite a bit of research and actually talked with some of the families of the missing women. And one of the things that you wrote about when you were doing this whole series of articles is that the missing women looked alike. They had dark hair, same body build. Lacey Peterson was the typical, you know, person. That was what they looked like. Now, did Suzanne Jovan resemble these women? And could her stab wounds have been any kind of satanic ritual?
That's a good question. I would say that we've been looking at two particular body types over the years. And one is the Chandra Levy type, who was actually somewhat similar in appearance to Lacey Peterson in that they were both, graced with beautiful dark hair and somewhat petite. Chandra was probably a lot more athletic looking, but the way that they went missing and the fact that they then turned up dead later on somewhere else, etc., those are consistent. There was a girl of, Lucius in El Salvador, who went missing, and then her body was later discovered in San Francisco Harbor. And
I know, just a short distance. Her body was discovered just a short distance from the house where the man lived who murdered a woman in Nevada. Do you remember that connection to this woman?
There was a considerable controversy over that. So we have seen over the years two particular body types that seem to be picked out or that fall victim to these awful murders. And Jovan was athletic and had reddish brown hair and fair skin. And then there were the Chandra Levy types, more Semitic looking, you know, and then of course she was Jewish, so naturally she would look like a Jewish girl. But also Lacey Peterson, who had that wonderful smile and the dark hair. And in many cases, the women are fairly petite. Suzanne Jovan was not particularly petite, but she was very lithe and somewhat athletic. And so of the two categories, you know, the dark-skinned, brown-haired girl and the fair-haired, light-skinned girl, those kept coming up when I was doing the searches of missing girls and missing women. And there were so many similarities, I began to think, well, okay, there's a stream here. There's some kind of genetic or DNA marker that these women have that causes them to become targets. Of course, now, that does not discount the awful loss that people feel when you know, an African-American girl goes missing and is murdered, or, you know, somebody from some other ethnic strain, so to speak, goes missing and is later discovered to be murdered. There's entirely too much of it. And, frankly, it became an obsession with me, and after a time, I had to give it up because there was no answers. You couldn't find out any more than was already there. And I wrote about it and investigated it and looked at it until it, frankly, just began to make me ill.
Well,
and I had to give it up.
Yeah, neither you nor I ever believed Scott Peterson killed Lacey. Both you and I felt she was a satanic sacrifice.
Absolutely.
With the baby being cut out of her. But anyway, I don't think I ever, I never wrote about this on Rumor Mill, so, and I probably never even told you. Friends of mine were investigators in San Luis Obispo, where Scott and Lacey lived. And there were a whole series of missing girls in that area that they said were sacrificed in satanic rituals, and then their bodies were burned in a certain area.
Mm-hmm.
And they went in, these two investigators went in, dug up the area and found bones and tried to take them to the, local district attorney to get him to go look at it. And that was when, according to them, they found out how really dirty San Luis Obispo is. And, of course, if you go back to right after World War II, according to other friends who have investigated San Luis Obispo, that's where the Project Paperclip scientists were brought, so that they could learn to speak English and, you know, get new names and be mainstreamed into culture. So San Luis Obispo, which is very near to William Randolph Hearst's castle, is a very interesting community.
I wonder if it doesn't sit on one of those geomagnetic nodes that these people seem to favor. I really don't know, but you're right. There was a lot of stuff going on at the San Luis Obispo campus, and it wasn't the largest of the different campuses in the system, but it was very much in favor for those people of the middle class and maybe the upper middle class who could afford to send their children to college, but not to the top college, or perhaps they weren't the best students. And so you could go there and you could get a fine education and it wouldn't cost you an arm and a leg. And the place is really rather nice. I mean, I've read about the community there.
And it's a beautiful area. Absolutely,
yeah, it's
a beautiful area.
It's one of those, is right, it's one of those things in California that makes Californians never want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Scott and Lacey met on that campus, of course, he was from the San Diego area originally, but the whole sorry saga around him, I mean, this, the more you looked at this guy, the less you had to like him. He wasn't dealing straight with anybody. I mean, he was a scumbag. Well, unfortunately. Yeah, that's a great thing.
The piece of information that I was just going to give you, which came from one of my, you know, ex-military sources, is that Scott has been implicated in those satanic rituals. And people knew they could never get him on that, so they were going to get him on this one, whether he had anything to do with it or not.
And, of course, we do know that there was the rumor, not just a rumor, but a report, that somebody was driving around in their area. What county is that?
Stanislaus County.
Right, in Stanislaus County, just picking up homeless girls and torturing them.
Yeah, that went on at the same time. And that group actually was linked to a satanic group in Lodi where, you know, they tortured God knows how many women. Lodi's about, 5-10 miles north of Modesto.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody went to jail, you know, in the satanic group. So it kind of makes you wonder who's involved. At what level of government are these people involved?
And if not involved, why are they protecting them, or why are they looking the other way? I mean, if you look the other way, you're not necessarily involved, but you are protecting people who have no reason to be protected. They're not our friends. They're the enemy of all that is good and decent in humanity. And if they worship the devil, fine. Don't start killing people and call it religion.
And so either these people are being paid an awful lot of money, or they're being blackmailed. And
or both.
Or both. What I believe is nobody gets any position of power these days unless somebody has something on them, you know, with which they can control them.
Unfortunately, I have to agree with you because my limited experience in politics here in Connecticut tells me pretty much the same thing. Either you put a price tag on your soul or you don't get anywhere.
That's exactly right. One of the other things that, you know, the highest level of the New World Order likes is they like to get these young and promising men. Women don't get in on this particular one, but they get these young and promising men and they introduce them to sex with children. And then, of course, they videotape them. And so they've got a videotape of, you know, this lawyer having sex with a 5-year-old or whatever. Therefore, they control that man the rest of his life.
Correct.
And they help him go up the ladder in politics. Maybe he becomes the president of a certain country. But he is completely in the pocket of these men. He can't do anything else. And that is absolutely the way that they control and have controlled, you know, for probably hundreds of years now. Colonel Gaddafi, the one that I mentioned a little bit ago, Colonel Gaddafi came to power by deposing whatever the king was. That king of Libya supplied the children to the pedophiles in Europe. And so the New World Order loved Libya at that time. Well, when Gaddafi came to power and killed all the pedophiles, that was when Gaddafi, became persona non grata. And, of course, you and I know about these two factions. Faction 1 is the New World Order, and Faction 2 is the people who want the New World Order gone. And they picked up Gaddafi and became friends of his. Anyway, Richard and I will be right back, and I want to get into Natalie, because you and I both did some good research on Natalie. You're listening to RumorMillNewsRadio.com. I'm talking with Richard Green, and we will be back after the commercial.
Little slide of hand, and we're right back to where we began.
This show is brought to you by the makers of JC Tonic, the Youth Solution. First introduced to the market over 60 years ago, the Youth Solution's 18 bidirectional herbs and 6 vital minerals emphasize balance and longevity, counteract stress, improve endurance, increase physical and mental energy, stamina and circulation, and detoxify and maintain cellular health. Try the Youth Solution now and join the thousands of consumers experiencing life-saving results. For more information, visit us online at rumormillnews.lifequestworld.com or call 1-800-528-6642 and be strong, live long.
Younger and feel youthful and revitalized. We strive for these things our whole life, but always seem to fall short of our expectations. Some products on the market may sound great, but all you're really getting is expensive marketing and a bottle full of chemicals. Remember, aging is a disease, reminding us every day that our bodies are breaking down. The new wave of natural health and beauty is here with Orgon's G5 Organic Silica. The anti-aging potential of G5 Organic Silica is one of the elements in the body that becomes greatly deficient as we age. Just 2 tablespoons of G5 Organic Silica a day can help keep aging away. Also, check out Orgon's Chembuster. With a food shortage and crops more precious than ever, the Chembuster can help alleviate drought and increase fertility and vitality of your crops. Health does not need to be expensive or complicated. Simple technology equals profound results at OrgonProducts.org. Visit orgoneproducts.org or call 646-498-5309. That's 646-498-5309.
This is Raylan Allen. I'm the publisher of Rumor Mill News, and we're here with our executive editor, Richard Green. And we've been talking about some of the research that Richard and I have done over the years. And some of them have led to what we believe are sacrifices, satanic rituals. But there's another one, another missing lady that we don't connect to satanic rituals. We connect to white slave trafficking, and that's Natalie
Holloway.
Thank you. Her name just went out of my mind. Richard, do you want to start on that one? Because you believe that you found another missing girl who fell off a ship, who actually is in that high, very high-class brothel on Santa Margarita Island off Venezuela, which is very, very near to Aruba, where Natalie disappeared. So do you want to start off talking about what you've discovered?
Well, this was a source of some controversy. I'm not going to name the young lady because her family asked me to stop talking about her sometime after I began to try to connect the dots. But she was on a cruise ship, and shortly before it docked, after having left Aruba, actually, she disappeared between 5 and 6 in the morning. She looked probably more like Chandra Levy or some of the other dark-haired women who have gone missing in the past few years. And then somehow or another, somebody captured a picture of a girl or a woman who was being advertised for sexual services in this bordello that lies off the coast of Venezuela. And the whole issue of how this island could support such a business so close to a civilized country like Venezuela became really large. And then what came up was this was a mob joint. This was a Cosa Nostra or mafia-owned operation. And they were so busy laundering money through the Caribbean that they needed somewhere for their troops, so to speak, and their clients to have recreation. And in some cases, they just bought girls outright and then raised them to become prostitutes. And in other cases, they just kidnapped young ladies and said, you know, you can do this or you can die. And the facts of the matter are that after a certain amount of time in that life, you really probably cannot go back to a regular regime of living, even if you are somehow freed from sexual slavery and bondage.
You're usually put on drugs, you know, when the girls are made into sex slaves. They're shot up with drugs so that they're dependent upon you.
Well, and there's a number of ways to do it. They don't necessarily have to be, you know, doped all the time. They can be conditioned. If they get them young enough, they basically say, this is your life, and you can live or you can die. And in some cases, you know, they have a relatively soft birth, so to speak. They don't have to work hard. They just have to service men they don't know. They can't go anywhere, but where they're living is kind of like paradise, and if that's all you know, then that's all you know. This is odious to me. This is completely against all the most fundamental tenets of Western society as we know it. And it's immoral, it's inhuman, and yet it goes on. And it's protected by people who, as you mentioned, have either black dossiers on themselves or who are paid to look the other way or who are complicit in the traffic for various reasons, not the least of which is it's lucrative. And it's just not right, you know. We can't call ourselves a civilized and humane society if we don't do something about traffic and white slavery and the subordination of relatively innocent young women into the bordello life. It's not consonant with the main tenets of our society, at least has been expressed over 200 years. We can't allow it. And yet, what can we do? When men of influence and power use these women, and when men of influence and power protect the purveyors, it's a conundrum.
Yeah.
You can't break through on any side, or so it seems. And in fact, after I started, you know, writing about this young lady and comparing the known pictures of her when first she disappeared from a cruise ship, and then looking at the picture on the website that this bordello maintained, I had come to the conclusion that, you know, this is it. This is her. There she is.
Yeah,
U.S. citizen.
I looked at her too, and I agreed with you.
This is an abduction. This is kidnapping. Kidnapping is against the law everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's against international law and our law and Aruban law and so on and so forth. It's probably even against the law in Venezuela, even though they have a business there from kidnapping. It's unbelievable. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating to try to be a good journalist and to be on the side of right and to think about things getting better because we can talk about issues and talk about the truth and compare notes and use the internet to function without censorship for the most part, and then have these sort of things happen. It's just not right. And, you know, if you're a man who loves women and likes them, and if you're a man who has children and one of them is a daughter, you can't stand it. It hurts so much inside, unless you're not a man, unless you're a hollow man, unless you have no guts, no feeling. Now, there's a lot of people in our country who fall into that category. They don't have any feeling anymore. They don't care about anything anymore except what's in front of them. What's on the dinner table, what's in the driveway. That's it.
Well, you know, we're conditioned to be that way. We're not supposed to be interested in anything, but, you know, what's on Fox News, you know, American Idol, or, you know, who's going to win the Super Bowl, etc. People aren't encouraged to, you know, to live noble lives anymore. We're all brought down to the Hollywood level. But I want to go into Natalie's Holloway. It was shortly after she was kidnapped that I was sent some information from someone that I know, government guy, and he went into the Aruba Mafia, and his guess was Natalie was sold into white slavery and sent over to Venezuela, was what he said. And you're the one that found Santa Margarita Island and that brothel there. But you do realize that how many years has it been since Natalie? Three, four, five?
I think three? Something like that.
Well, Joran Vandersloot has an interview with Greta Van Susteren about, oh, five, 6 months ago, in which he absolutely admitted that he sold Natalie into slavery and got $10,000.
And that's cheap at half the price.
Yeah, that's cheap at half the price.
The fact that he could make that admission and not be arrested by authorities in the United States using some arcane treaty or international protocol, or just send in the SEALs and get him.
I know.
And take him out and beat him until he talks.
Not only that, he had a recording, and of course it was in Dutch or whatever language, Flemish, whatever language they speak there on Aruba. It was a conversation with his father, and his father said to him, "Joran, human trafficking is very serious." My God, they practically have a tape where Joran confesses, and yet he's not arrested?
No, because the people who control that Bordello Island have a list of clients that are top shelf, clearly. In addition
clearly,
to that,
the New World Order leaders.
And probably. And then
by the way, Aruba is one of the islands where they launder all the drug money.
I was just going to get to that.
Yeah.
These are places where, you know, dirty money changes hands and becomes clean money. Money is money, and it talks. We live in a world that is absolutely ruled by the obsession of the major powers and the leaders of the major powers with money. If you've got money, they'll try to take it from you. Unless you figure out a way to protect yourself, probably by being either in league with them or being so tough that they can't touch you. It's very difficult for truly rich people to escape the kinds of temptations and traps, money traps and honey traps, that these people set. And this is a theme that you've sounded over the years, and I've come to believe it's the absolute truth. The worst thing that happens is that you get a lot of money and you don't know what to do with it. Because then the sharks circle, and the next thing you know, you're being eaten up by somebody else. And if they can't get you in a scam or a swindle, they get you with some kind of, you know, manufactured controversy that makes you look like the worst person in the world. And that is, in essence, that's part of why the case of Suzanne Jovan became such an obsession with me. Because here was a young lady of great promise. Everybody liked her. She was a good person and volunteered for the, you know, for the mentally challenged in her community, and the daughter of a brilliant scientist, and they snuffed her. She was snuffed for reasons that we still do not understand, and I won't go for that. I can't. I mean, there's nothing I can do about it now except complain, but it has galled me since the day I realized that it was not just a random murder.
Well, I just pulled up Rumor Mill News, you know, that a strange web page that we keep referring to.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when Madeleine McCann was kidnapped and they believed that her parents killed her and then disposed of her body?
Yes.
They have just now discovered, guess what? These are things that you and I said forever. You know, look for the pedophile networks. Okay, their Momoa just published an article from the Daily Mail in the UK that the detectives uncover Spanish child porn network. Big surprise, huh?
Well, no.
I know it. I mean, you and I said that from the very beginning. Do you remember when there were the deaths, all by suicide? There were three major British law enforcement people. One was with Scotland Yard, one was, you know, the constable in some village, and the other one was Camilla Parker's bodyguard.
Right.
All three of those men supposedly committed suicide. Well, guess what was going on at the time these three men supposedly killed themselves? That was when that, was it on Guernsey or Jersey? It was the boys' home where the children were tied up in the basement and horribly tortured and raped and God knows what else happened to these poor little boys in a orphanage on the Isle of either Jersey or Guernsey. And they were digging it up and just finding, you know, just the little shop of horrors.
Mm.
And then suddenly these three, oh, these three law enforcement officials, all in their 50s or 60s, suddenly commit suicide. Now, was there a connection or was there no connection?
Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure out one of two things happened. Either these guys knew something and were getting close to the truth and had to be eliminated, or these guys knew something because they were part of it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
If you want cover for your melodious and despicable practices, the best thing to do is to recruit some young detectives and work them up through the system so they always owe you. And then from time to time you feed them little tidbits about, you know, this crook or that crook, so they keep getting their arrests and their convictions. But all the while, the main event is covered up and disguised and camouflaged. And I hate to say it, but I think we've seen this been as a motif or a method of doing business in this horrible trade for years. It's just hard to realize looking at it from the outside.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to Madeleine McCann. What is amazing is it was not the Spanish police that got this tip and which led to the arrest. Barcelona-based private detectives were hired by Jerry and Kate McCann to help find Madeleine 6 months after she vanished. 3 months into their investigation, they received an anonymous email saying the toddler appeared in a child porn video being distributed on the Internet. Oh, my God, how horrible. In other words, the police in Barcelona did nothing. I mean, this is just disgusting. The team, led by agency director Francisco Marco, tracked down the images but discovered Madeleine did not appear among them. They reported their finding to Spain's national police, who launched an operation to hunt down the pedophiles distributing the videos. Armed police launched a series of raids across Spain last month and arrested 13 people. 10 more are being formally investigated by a judge at a Barcelona court who is overseeing the police operation. Father of two, Marco, 36, said these videos were the worst images I have seen in my life. He added, in the video, all the victims were under 10 years old. I am satisfied to have taken out of circulation more than 20 pedophiles and those who will be arrested in the future. Oh, my God.
Well, see, here again, you have the technology and the power of the Internet coming to the assistance and to the rescue, even if it is late. Without a more unregulated and informal method of communicating, we'd never get these stories out. They just never would surface. There'd be no way to communicate them if they did surface. They would stay local. And yet now I can read the latest news in Pakistan or India or Korea. I can check my email and get messages from all over the world if they have an Internet that's worth it. This is a revolution in human consciousness and in human communications abilities, and it all goes back to the inventor of the telegraph.
Yeah, it does. You know, we think about all of this technology that we have right now, and in many ways, fax machines were actually created in the early part of our century, and, you know, it was technology, you know, the ones and the zeros, that all of the computer things are based on.
Right.
So it's amazing how quickly we have come in one century.
True.
Now, I was just looking at the main page of our news site. I don't know if you've looked at it, but evidently there's another earthquake swarm that's continuing to rock Yellowstone. What do you think about that? Do you think that there really is a super volcano under there, or do you think it's just a lot of hype?
I really don't know. One could suspect that there is a pretty significant geomagnetic event about to happen there. It is one of the most amazing places on Earth, and it has been geologically active for a very long time, certainly since it was discovered by English-speaking people.
And the quakes today, the largest was a 3.9. They were all 3 point, over 3 point. But those are the largest quakes that they've had there.
Well, that's not happy news for people in the area. And
it may be
that something happens.
You know, I know that earthquakes and volcanoes can be triggered by any of these weather war machines. They can be triggered by the low-yield nuclear bombs so that there's no footprints or fingerprints left, you know, pointing to somebody having triggered the event.
Mm.
But if somebody wanted to, you know, I just look at the United States, and if Barack Obama is getting ready to take us out of the New World Order, most people think that he's getting ready to pull us into the New World Order and make us, you know, New World Order slaves, you know, with the tattoos on our arms. But what if, you know, what if he is this reverse Trojan horse where, you know, instead of pretending to be a loyal person when he's a communist inside, what if he's a loyal person pretending to be a communist just to get elected so that he actually can get in and do something? You know, the reverse Trojan.
That's an interesting theory.
And so if there are people who know, even at the highest level of the New World Order, who know that he may indeed have the ability to put an end to all of their tyranny that they have been wreaking throughout the world for centuries now, and the sex slaves and the pedophiles, I mean, that's just right up the New World Order alley. I mean, these are the guys that invented this stuff. And so if they feel threatened, I believe they could do anything. And triggering Yellowstone to go up, in my mind, is one of the things that they could do. Then they would all move to Australia, you know, which is where they have settled anyway. They've got their underground bunkers totally prepared in Australia. At least they think they do. They think they're going to be safe there. I don't think they will be.
I don't think they will be either. And let me add one thing.
Sure.
If these people, these pedophiles and Satanists and the rest of them who are the fellow travelers of this secretive bunch, who, as you mentioned, have been around for several hundred years in their current form, and for how long before that we don't know.
Thousands is what I think.
Well, that's possible. Certainly, we can certainly go back 400 years and identify the threads of the creation of this colossus of tyranny. But thanks to dear old Samuel Morse, Samuel F.B. Morse, who graduated from Yale, I might add.
And lives right down the street from me here in Pebble Beach.
We have the Internet, because the Internet is nothing more than an extremely, you know, efficient, high-speed telegraph.
That's right.
And he, with a couple of other men, was the pioneer in Internet technology, because that was the creation of the first functioning telegraph that was able to send and receive messages in a code that everybody could use, that anybody could learn. And, you know, I mean, he was a painter, for God's sake. He was an artist. He wasn't really disposed to be an inventor as such. He just happened to have time on his hands between portraitures. And he and his friends in New York and Massachusetts came up with these brilliant ideas to make the rudimentary telegraph system that they had learned about from a guy in Germany into something that you could use every day. And then, of course, with the initiation of Morse code, the system became functional as a communication system and not just a novelty, not just a toy. And the telegraph system of sending, you know, messages in short bursts is the model that supports the Internet.
Right.
And it is, the Internet is an extremely high-speed functional form of the telegraph. And that's what we get. We get email messages, which are basically telegraph messages.
Well, I bet I know something about Samuel F.B. Morse that you don't know.
What's that?
When he set up Pebble Beach as this elite community on the Monterey-Carmel Peninsula there, he wrote into the contract of anybody that was buying the land from him. Evidently, he owned the land. I don't know how he got it. But he wrote into their contract, and it was binding. You had to follow this, or, you know, you lost your property that you had just paid several million for.
Mm-hmm.
And that little piece that you had to agree to is that you would not sell your property to any descendants of the Ottoman Empire. Isn't that amazing?
I can believe it. He was a real strange one.
And so that took in all of the Muslim world, took in many blacks in Africa, and somehow he threw Jews in there too. And I don't know how he got that in there, but for the longest time, even Jews were not allowed to live there. But, you know, that quickly passed in the early 20s.
Mm.
But still, blacks and Muslims were not allowed to live there.
Well, that's kind of weird, but this was a genius, and geniuses are often extremely eccentric.
Isn't that the truth?
And the other interesting thing about Morse, in the moments we have remaining, is that he was an absolute America-first nativist. And this is a man who traveled widely in Europe and lived in London and studied art and such. And in his writings, in his political writings in the 1830s, there was not anybody who hated the Vatican and the Pope more than him. Of course, his father was a Protestant minister, so that probably has something to do with it. But he was raised at a time when Catholics were still, you know, no-go. It was not in the 1830s the case that you could be considered a good American if you were loyal to the Catholic Church before your loyalty to your country and your state.
And Richard, our time has come to an end. We'll have to do this again real soon.
Okay.
Folks, you've been listening to RumorMillNewsRadio.com. Tomorrow you're going to hear Richard Hoagland talk about the mystery school traditions of Barack Obama. See you then.
Stroke of a pen, little sleight of hand, and we're right back to where we began.